You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Here to have a kōrero about her newest and final single off of her 6-track debut EP is Evie Bamford. Evie is a Tamaki-based indie songwriter, multi-instrumentalist and producer who has had a breakout 2026. Just a bit of a content warning for this next interview. There will be mention and discussion of body dysmorphia, so this is a sensitive topic for you. Please take care of yourself. Tune out and tune back in at 10 a.m. Now on the show to talk about her track, Daily Bread. Welcome, Evie. Evie, how are you?
Morena! I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. You're not too cold. You're quite bundled up there.
I am. I know. And I've got a blanket, like, over my legs. So what the hell? I am cold. But it's just because my whare is real cold. It's I'm in Auckland, as you said. So it's actually not too chilly. But my whare, like, just gets not a single ounce of sun. And it's a beautiful sunny day, but none of it is coming inside.
Yeah, there's some serious condensation going on behind you on that window.
Yeah, there really is.
It's like, it looks like it's got a screen over top of it. Now, we're here to talk about your single, but you have an upcoming EP releasing in September, Now Rising, Now Falling, and you've deemed this last single, Daily Bread, as the emotional centerpiece of the EP. It's a very vulnerable track. Would you describe the EP as vulnerable as a whole?
I guess so. I mean, like, they're all songs that are very personal to me, as with most songwriters, you know, and you write about your feelings. And so, like, they're all vulnerable in a way. But I also, like, now, because we recorded the whole EP, like, about a year ago, and, you know, I had spent so much time writing the songs, like, well before then, and then developing them with my band before we recorded them. So I think even though they were, like, really vulnerable at the time, it's kind of, like, easier to look at them now and easier to share them now because I'm putting them out with a little bit of, like, disconnection to them. So, yeah, I would say that they're, like, very personal and very much, like, about my life and my feelings, which is scary to show to the world, but is also now I'm, like, I don't know. I don't really remember. I can't really remember how I was feeling when I wrote a lot of those songs. So it's kind of nice in a way.
Totally. Yeah. The track features really lush guitars and, like, a very swooning clarinet and trumpet. It builds an intensity which mirrors the lyrical content. And the songwriting process, was the lyrics the first thing you did, or was it the instrumentation?
It was actually the lyrics first for this one. And I think that I follow that process, like, quite the same most of the time. I would say I do that, write the lyrics first, just because I find them the hardest part. And so if I'm, like, chipping away at those and kind of have, like, a bit of a structure with the lyrics, then I can, like, figure out the music part later, because that's, like, where my confidence lies, is, like, in the instrumental bit. But this song specifically, I actually wrote most of the lyrics for it when I was on a plane. Which, yeah, it's not, like, a usual songwriting process, but me and my partner, we went away, this was years ago, we went away overseas for a couple months, and we were, you know, doing the whole, like, Euro summer thing, and we had a really long and unexpected layover in Singapore, so our flight got delayed, like, 13 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, which was so, so lame, getting off the plane in Singapore and being like, oh my God, plus 13 hours. But Singapore Airlines were really nice about it. They, like, put us up in a hotel. It ended up being fabulous because we ended up, like, getting a really nice hotel, like, being able to sleep in between our really long flights and things. but in this hotel, there was, like, a set of scales in the bathroom. And I never weigh myself just because it's fucking shit. but after, you know, eating pasta and bread and drinking beers and cocktails and just, like, having a riot all time in Europe, I, for some reason, just decided to weigh myself. And then my boyfriend weighed himself after me, and I weighed more than him. And I was like, so angry about it, which is so stupid. And to anybody listening that's felt this way, like, it's so fucking stupid to say it out loud. But it just really upset me. And it made me feel really, like, infeminine, you know? And so, yeah, I, like, got back on this plane and I, like, didn't tell my boyfriend how I was feeling about it. I was just, like, very closed off, and then, like, scribbled out most of these lyrics on the plane back home. And then I guess that the song kind of ended, like, with the bridge section that kind of isn't necessarily about, like, body dysmorphia or even physical insecurity. I think just, like, in general, it's just in general about anxiety, like, reminding myself that I have nothing to be afraid of, and that, yeah, I just have nothing to be scared of.
Yeah, it's really interesting knowing the backstory to writing the lyrics, because when I read the lyrics and listened to the song, it's like it takes you on such a journey where you kind of start off in this train of thought and it's a bit, you know, it's spiraling, this anxiety is spiraling, and then you kind of eventually come to a point of reason, like you were saying, or this, you know, happier conclusion. You've got those beautiful lyrics at the end. If the numbers come from flowers in my hair or sand from my home stuck in between my toes, maybe I'd no longer care about these numbers that make up my bones. So nice. And then, like you said, you kind of had that like mantra at the end. How does it feel playing it live? I mean, you said earlier that you feel a little bit more disconnected from it, but does it still give you any kind of catharsis where you're like, oh yeah, like that's my mantra again?
That one, we do still play live, and I, every time I play it, I do really like the song. And I think it is like, it's almost a hard sell in a way, because it's like obviously a vulnerable song, and it also takes a while for it to get going. Like, it doesn't really have a chorus, and it's very like lollipy kind of the whole way. Like, it's kind of drawn out, but every time I get to that bridge, I do feel really proud of it. Like, I really like that bridge, and I feel really like powerful in myself. And I'm getting a phone call.
Busy person, wanted by everyone.
Oh no, I hope that they don't go to call me again. It was an unknown number as well, so it could be anyone. What was I saying? Oh yeah, when I perform it, I always feel really proud of that bit, and it always feels really nice. There were a couple times where I started it, like a couple shows where we would play it at the start of a set, because it was actually like quite a good way to get over nerves of being like at the end, like, I don't have anything to be afraid about. This is so fun.
Yeah.
And I did that a couple times and I really liked it. But I think from an audience perspective, it is like kind of a heavy song to like start a set with. And
yeah.
So I kind of have stopped doing that. It's also the melody in the first verse is quite hard to sing for me for some reason, even though I wrote it that way. And so when I'm like not super warmed up or like a little bit nervous, it's very easy. It just like jumps around a lot.
Yeah.
So it's easy to mess it up. But yeah.
Nice. Does it, do you feel like the themes in it are an important thing for, you know, especially young women to kind of listen to and go through that mantra with you?
Yeah, I think that we as women, I mean, obviously just like have such a hard time of it growing up, and that it was definitely something like body image, my like physical value as a person, it was just like something that was ingrained in me from like such a young age. Like, I feel like I was aware of my like physical appearance from like the age of like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
And, you know, which is just so young, and for it to be so, like instilled in me that art, that's one of the most important parts of me, just because of, you know, the way that family members might have talked to you, the way that like men might have catcalled you when you were fucking in primary school. Like, there's just so many, so many parts of society, and I'm definitely like not the right person to be preaching about this or like sending a message about it, but it's really hard, and it definitely does exist very much so in music as well, where you sort of think, firstly, I'm like competing against my male counterparts, like just because there's people assume that I'm not very good at it. So I have to compete against them. And then the second part of it is like, you not only have to try to be fucking as better than them or as good as you can be, and then also look really good while you're doing it.
Yeah.
And like, there's all of this other stuff that exists alongside it that like, you know, you look at Ed Sheeran, he's like not a very attractive person, but he's one of the most famous artists in the world just because he's a man.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? I think very frustrating.
As well, like now, especially I wonder about young girls who are going through, you know, primary school and going into high school now, and phones and social media, you know, it's always been an issue, but now it's like so in your face. And,
yeah. You know, like self-comparison thing.
Yeah, totally.
Especially you see like 13-year-olds now on TikTok, and they're like, they look like adults, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just because they're around. At least like when I was 13, I was still like doing really terrible makeup and stuff, you know? Like, at least I didn't have access to everything. But yeah, I think it's just always been something that I've cared a lot about, unfortunately, and wish that I didn't. And I get so frustrated at myself when like I have a terrible day just because I feel really shit about how I look.
But it's such a universal experience, you know, and so many people go through it. And so when you hear a song like this, you're like, it's that kind of moment of like, okay, like I'm not the only one who has this spiral. And then even though you might end up in the point of reason, you know, it is such a universal experience to go through that.
That's nice. Thank you. I think it is. Yeah, it is universal. It just pisses me off that like most of the time it's like women that are feeling that way. Like I definitely know that there are men in my life that I love and care about very much that don't experience that.
Mm.
And that, you know, like don't ever think about how they look just because it hasn't really been made to feel that important to them.
Yeah.
They can very well, you know, go through all their day like not thinking about it. And that
doesn't And even the, you know, the men who have those insecurities, they're shaped differently. They aren't.
Yeah. And of course, it's so still valid. Like, I'm not saying that men don't ever feel like physically insecure. Of course, it's just it is different.
Yeah, totally. And you've been playing with your band for over a year and playing these songs. And you kind of mentioned that the material evolves through that process. How did this track in particular evolve through that process?
This one was one of the original songs that I had. So most of the songs on the EP, except for the last one, which is called Your Girl, all of those songs were like songs that I had all fully realized like before I brought them to my band, because those were like the five songs where I was like, okay, this is like enough for me to have a set and like put on a gig and stuff once I had finished those five songs. So they were honestly like pretty finished by the time I had brought them to my band. But I think that this one, just because it's like quite... like the form is very loose, and like I said, it doesn't really have like a proper chorus. I think because of that, it definitely took like a lot of workshopping in the band. And the kind of core parts of it were like pretty solid, but then the like clarinet and trumpet parts that you hear, those were pretty much only introduced like when I was overdubbing them, and I just like was playing some clarinet parts over it, and then my trumpet player like copied the clarinet parts, and so we kind of like wrote those like in post, really, and now they're like a part of the live set, but they weren't really before that.
Now the EP drops September 1st. It's available to pre-save through your socials. What's next in store for you between now and then in terms of the EP release?
I got a couple shows later this month. They're both with my band, which is really exciting because I haven't played a show with my band since like February.
Oh, wow.
Ages and ages. Yeah. I've been doing so many solo and duo shows just because like money's tight for people, and it's fair enough. But I'm so excited to play with my band again. So we're opening for Logan Edwards.
Oh, we love Logan here.
So his Tamaki show at Big Fan, I believe it's on the 24th of July. And then on the 31st of July, I'm playing the BFM Fancy New Band Showcase.
Amazing.
At Tunic Fort, which will be really fun. And then hopefully in September, I'll be doing a couple shows to celebrate the release. Hoping to do one in Wellington, one in maybe Raglan, and one in Auckland. But I don't know if I'm going to be able to afford coming to the South Island.
Eventually. So. As long as all the people in the North Island go to your shows.
Then you'll
be able to eventually
make money.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the program, Evie. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thanks so much for having me. Oh, it's hard to chat about this stuff, but I appreciate the kōrero about it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's hard to talk about, but I always think like when you have those chats, especially on somewhere that's like a public platform, there's always going to be someone listening who's getting something out of it, you know?
And that's like why we do art, right?
We all go through similar experiences, but no one wants to feel alone. And it's good to remind yourself, you're never alone in what you feel.
Yeah, hard out.
Hard out. the track is available across streaming and to purchase from Bandcamp. You can find Evie on social media and eagerly await her EP. Here it is on Radio 1. Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi, it is Evie Bamford with Daily Bread.
The world is spinning.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.